Greetings from the McHugh Center, where on this overcast Wednesday, we're back for another installment of the Wahoo Central Podcast. I'm Jeff White from VirginiaSports.com. My guest today is one of the new faces in the UVA Athletic Department, head men's lacrosse coach, Lars Tiffany. Lars, welcome to the show.
Jeff, it's great to be in here. I've seen this room, and now I get to sit in this room. Feeling like a big deal.
You've been working with your new team for about a month now. How is fall ball going, and what was your strategy going into it? I know you didn't have the whole team working really all together initially, right?
Exactly. The concept is, let's spend the first month in the small skill session phase. The NCAA gives us about 6 weeks to practice with our team in the off season here, and most programs dive right into practice because everyone wants to see what the freshmen look like and want to get up to full speed. But it just doesn't make sense from an educational perspective. Let's start small and build this thing. You know, the freshmen have a lot going on their plate. First years. And in terms of learning the new lifts in the weight room, the classrooms, the tutoring, so all that they have to do on a plate, the last thing I want to do is all of a sudden go 100 miles an hour on the lacrosse field. So there's a lot of reasons why we do what we do, but we spent the first month really trying to make them better individual players and developing their skills and introducing some of the nomenclature that we're going to play with. But for the most part, how can we make the men of the program better lacrosse players? And that 4 weeks just finished, and now we've had our first two practices, and we have our third one this afternoon. And now we really sort of put the smaller pieces together into the bigger picture.
I know different coaches have different philosophies about scrimmaging other college teams in the fall. And I guess if a player plays in one of those scrimmages, it counts toward his eligibility, I believe, for
yes.
The season. What's your philosophy as far as, will you be playing anybody this fall, or are you keeping it kind of in-house?
Right, in-house. Good question. Started doing it a couple years ago when we were coaching up north, and now they're down here. I want to continue that, and maybe I'll change someday, but different sports have different rules. Men's lacrosse is one of those sports where if you do play in a fall scrimmage, that does count as a year of eligibility. But I do it for even other reasons. We only have 17 contest dates, whether it's a scrimmage or not, whether it's in the fall or the spring. And I would like to coach more games. I think the men want to play more games. And so reserving those all 17 for the spring also makes sense to me. But then, again, back to the educational perspective, I'd hate to, in the middle of what we're trying to do right now, you know, developing the ethos, the work, the pace that we play at, developing better lacrosse players, I'd hate to all of a sudden stop for a couple of days and say, okay, we got a scrimmage coming up. We got to prep
for them. Yeah.
We got to stop and worry about how to clear the ball specific to an out of bounds situation or to an end line. We have to get to that. But right now, let's define who we are as people, creating that culture, and making better lacrosse players individually.
As I think everybody knows, the man you succeeded in that office down the hall, Dom Starzia, was your coach at Brown and is one of your mentors. What's it been like getting to reconnect with Dom? You guys haven't lived in the same town for many, many years, have you?
That's a good point. It's been a wonderful, pleasant sort of bonus of taking the job here. I didn't think I was going to be leaving Brown anytime soon. And it's interesting, Dom felt the same way when he took the job here 24 or 25 years ago. He said when he interviewed for it, he said, if I don't get it, I'm content to stay at Brown the rest of my life. And I feel very similar about that. But obviously he was fortunate to be in this position, and now I am. But yeah, you're right. I've always looked up to Dom as a mentor, as a father figure, and even as a friend. And now I get to spend even more time with him. I mean, geez, I lived with him. The first few weeks when I moved into town, and he's so gracious of him. And Kip Turner is actually staying there right now too. So it's a real wonderful benefit, because if you know Dom, if you've played for Dom, if you've been around Dom, you want to spend more time with him. You want to spend lunches with him. He has a way about him of making you feel better about yourself, but yet you feel like you're in such a wonderful graces of being in his presence of great stories, learning, educational, and just feeling really good about who he is and about yourself. He has a way of doing that.
A lot of former players follow this program closely and remain passionate about UVA lacrosse. I'm sure you've learned that. I know you've learned that. You've been reaching out regularly to the alumni group in person and by email. What has the response been from those guys?
The response almost unequivocally is hated to see Dom go. But, you know, now that you and your staff are here, you know, we're excited about what can go, what the future what the future holds. And to, like I say, I've heard that almost every time because I think everybody looks to Dom as like the godfather of lacrosse or the father figure in their life, even if they had a father. This is just this really, really important person. And I truly believe that. I've been quoted as saying, you know, I don't care where Dom's coaching. I would want my son to play for him, no matter where level he's coaching at. And so that all the alumni feel about him, no matter if they played a lot or didn't play a lot. If that's even if you felt like he shortchanged you in playing time, you still feel great about this man. But again, I think there was a lot of it like, okay, is it time for, you know, a new system, a new pace of play? And, you know, and honestly, what we're doing is what Dom coached me when I was playing at Brown and what he did for many years at Virginia. You know, recruit the right athletes, put them on the field, and let them play.
You grew up in Lafayette, New York, about 10 miles outside of Syracuse, and I've heard you say several times that a memorable part of your lacrosse education was playing pickup games with Native Americans on the nearby reservation. One of this team's best and most experienced players is Zed Williams, who's a member of Seneca Nation and from the Buffalo area. How have you, you know, enjoyed getting to know Zed, and how has he been on the field?
Yes, it is. What a wonderful, wonderful person. As soft-spoken and as shy of an athlete as I know. I mean, when you watch him play, and you just get so ingrained in sports these days that the better athletes can be
bravado,
very confident.
And,
you know, the cocky brashness, right? Just the opposite with him. And couldn't be, you know, he is a sort of that gentle giant persona. And I've really enjoyed starting to get to know him. I can't wait to get to know him better. But you're right, because for me, I played all the sports growing up, baseball, football, basketball. But then there was this other sport, lacrosse, that had a little bit more cultural meaning to the people I was playing with. You know, I grew up with the Native Americans, and we played all those sports. But then in the lacrosse game, there was something more different. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the war paint we were putting on our face. There was the war whoops we were making when we were circling the field. There was the pride from the community that we lived in that came out more in force. We were a lot better at lacrosse than any other sports too. You know, we'd football and basketball season, we'd take our lumps and just, hey, just wait till the spring. And so, I feel very lucky, very, very lucky to have grown up in that community, to have learned more than just a game from the Onondagas, which are one of the Iroquois, to learn more about the culture and the importance of the game to their entire lives. And I've always been I've been trying to recruit Native Americans, a little tougher at Brown, and now I'm excited about reconnecting. I wish Zed was I had more than just one year with Zed, but it is exciting for me to maybe try to be at a place where I can continue a pipeline here.
Your assistant coaches Sean Kerwin and Kip Turner came with you from Brown. A lot of our listeners will remember Kip from his days as a UVA goalkeeper. He was the goalie and I think the outstanding defensive player on the 2006 team that won the NCAA title. Not every coaching staff has a former goalie working with the goalies. How big a difference did that make, do you think, at Brown, where you had an All-American in the cage last season?
I think it makes a huge difference. To have a coach, to have someone who has played the game from that perspective of wearing a goalie mask and looking out onto the field, it makes a big difference than having somebody who played midfield or didn't even play the game trying to coach the goalie position. He can go to all the clinics he wants and all the seminars he wants. But you have a man, Kip Turner, who not only played it in college, but
played
at professional
MLL
level.
Too,
right? So there's Kip for four or five of the last 6 years while he coached at Brown with me, you know, at playing on, you know, Saturdays in the summer. And so continuing to remind himself of, you know, because sometimes as a coach, we forget, you know, how hard things can be, you know, or what some of the little idiosyncrasies of our job or our position when we played. And so if you're in the middle of it, running around, like, you know, a bit more empathy, a little more sympathy for the player. But there's no question. The real key, though, for Kip is his ability to connect with people. You spend time with Kip Turner, you want to spend more time with Kip Turner. Unless you're golfing with him and he's taking all your money. He is a phenomenal golfer. Yeah. He's
close to a scratch golfer, right?
He's shot under par twice already, and he shot a 69 the other day. So anyways, don't go on a golf course with Kip if you want to keep your money. But he is just a you say, hey, let's go for a run. Great, let's go for a run. You know, he's always up, adventurous. But with the men, he has an incredible ability to connect with them. And so even though he wasn't a face-off man himself, he helped Will Grall become a second-team All-American last year. He's just very personable. He spends the time watching film, and he can connect with people. And you want to please him. He makes you feel good about you, and so you want to make – you know, him feel good about you. And so he's got a way about him that the men really enjoy.
Sean Kerwin is your offensive coordinator, and he's considered one of the rising stars in the coaching profession. Brown led the nation in scoring last season. Obviously, you had some great offensive talent that had a lot to do with it, but I assume Sean was a big factor in that as well, right?
Yes, there was zero question that I wanted this entire staff to join me in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I took it with a grain of salt, but there were a lot of people who were congratulating me when I got the job and saying, all right, you're bringing your staff, right? You're bringing the staff, right? Like, are you excited about me or my staff? You know, and that's okay because I think the same way about my staff. And, but yeah, Sean Kerwin, it's not common to have somebody who at his age, or even any age really, who can pick up things so quickly. Like, it takes me usually a couple times of watching the film to sort of see a scheme of what's the offense that we're trying to defend, what's their purpose, what are they attacking. Sean can be during a game watching the game and saying, okay, they just changed their slide schemes. Let's do this. And he'll make adjustments on the fly that for most of the rest of us, we need at least 15 minutes or a couple of days of watching film to process. You know, he can pick up on it very quickly. And he carries the character he walks around this planet with as a 26-year-old in charge of people who are barely 5 years younger than him is uncanny. It's but again, the men are drawn to him. Yes, he's been successful, but it's more than just the success he's had. It's the way he talks with them and communicates with them. He'll get on them a little bit. I'm the older guy. I can get on everybody. But, Sean and Kip, for the most part, I would say are very player-friendly coach. But Sean, he'll dig in when people need to be – they need to be pushed around, but but he doesn't do it in a way that's destructive,
demeaning.
And the men just they believe in him, and the results are there. They should believe in him.
How quickly is it realistic to think that this group of players or any group of players where you come in with a new offense, like you're going to a little bit of a different philosophy than what was in place, that you can get up to speed with that? Is that something you expect? By the spring, it's going to look the way you want it to look, or is that a 2 or 3 year deal?
It might be a year or two. I'm not going to say 2 to 3, but maybe a year. But I think we can play at that speed. We had a couple players last year at Brown that we're not going to be able to replicate. Dylan Malloy's a very unique player. I think the speed that we play at is something that we're going to be able to get up to. I think we're going to be able to replicate that. The key, though, is Brown last year, we had two very, very good specialists in goalie Jack Kelly
and face-off
guy Will Grall. Right now, those are bigger question marks here. And, it was interesting. I listened to Bronco talk about his team, as they prepared for the season. The will is here, but we're not sure the skill is there. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to resonate inside me, because I'm seeing the will. We've had two practices so far, and not that injuries are something that we want or defining how hard we're playing, but we've had a broken thumb, a broken clavicle, and 5 stitches above an eye. These guys are getting after each other. They are competing. They are battling. And so we love the energy, the will. The weight room has been a good place for us as well. We just got to catch up at the skill level. I think that was the difference that we saw when Brown played Virginia in April down at Kennesaw State. That there was big, strong athletes here, just the skill level wasn't quite where we are. So I think that's where the year or two, to answer your question completely, comes in. But but the pace we're going to play at is going to be here. The key question, though, is let's say we don't feel comfortable in the goal. Can we play at the breakneck speed that allows our goalie, therefore, to be counterattacked and see 45 shots?
Right.
If we don't have that goalie, we're going to have a conundrum philosophically of, Do we need to be playing at more of a normal slow down pace? Which, you know, oh God, it's the last thing I want to do is admit to it. And so now the question comes in, do you coach for the game to win this one game, or are you coaching for the long-term vision for the recruiting process where you show recruits? And I'm really struggling with that one because obviously I want this to be a long-term project. I want this to, you know, say, hey, look, recruits, this is what we do, you know, regardless. But I also recognize that, you know, the staff, the team, the men, the alumni, the fan base, they want to beat Loyola that day. Whatever it takes to beat Loyola, let's beat Loyola that day. And so, you know, you look at Bill Belichick, you know, third string quarterback, doesn't matter. They just adjust a game plan. They put their guys in the best position to win that game. And next week, we'll see who's back. And then we'll put ourselves in the best position to win that game. So that is the moral conundrum that, philosophical conundrum, I should say, that may be in front of us the first year or two as we develop our skill positions.
You added another member to your staff, volunteer assistant, an immediate member of the all-name team in Rocco Romero. What is the role in your system of the volunteer assistant, and what will Rocco do?
Yeah, Rocco's job is to coach the men. You know, he is there to be player development, and we're ecstatic about that. He's a great experience he had at Cornell, just missed winning a national championship as a player. As a coach, he's been involved with a great teaching program in 3D run by Jamie Monroe. He is a Rocco Romero is someone that his role is to make our men better lacrosse players. And the scheme stuff is more on the other coaches. The recruiting he cannot be a part of by ancillary rule. So his job, see if he can always be watching the games, watching the practices from sort of the individual perspective. Because I know once we leave the skill session phase and now we're in the practice phase, my mindset as a coach is I am looking off ball, the slide schemes, the bigger picture, the hot air balloon look down on the field. And so it's nice to have a guy like Rocco who's still saying, hey, coach, I know you were worried about the third slide over there, but the guy's not bringing his hands back and releasing the ball properly, or the slide approach was wrong. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I wasn't even looking at that. I was looking at the hot air balloon view. So, and Rocco's been great in that role.
Your final team at Brown had the Towerton Award winner in Dylan Malloy. You reached the Final Four and had Dylan not been banged up. You know, you may well have won the NCAA title. What's your assessment of the talent level in this program? You know, you talked a little bit about the will before skill. You know, a lot of guys here came with, you know, big reputation out of high school. I mean, do you like the talent level in the program, or do you need to upgrade it?
We need to upgrade to get to that the aura of Virginia lacrosse. Let's talk about the attack first of all. Obviously, there's the hit list when you go down the last 25 years. You know, most recently still Stanwyck, but then the Gills, the Watsons, the Knights, the Gladdings,
Matt Ward,
the Warts. Those guys don't exist. We don't have that guy. Can you win without that one guy? Yes, but it's a lot easier when you have that Dylan Malloy, Stanwyck, etc. So we don't have, in my opinion, that rock star superstar. So what we've got to do is adapt to what we have. And right now we do have really good lacrosse players. And so, you know, to circle back again, maybe not the first team All-Americans, but men who are very talented, who've earned their reputations that they had in high school. And so we feel good about that. It's the challenge is, and I think, as I mentioned before, it's the skills. It's the face-offs and the goalie play. Are we going to be good enough at those two specialty areas? You know, there's a direct correlation to the success we had at Brown to the success we had in the goal and then the face-offs. And, you know, when the style that we play, when we play that fast, we're going to see a lot of shots because, you know, we're easily counterattacked. Right. We're going to there's going to be a lot of face-offs because there's a lot of goals scored. Well, if you're not winning faceoffs at consistently a high percentage, and you're not making a lot of saves, does this system, you know, work? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the challenge. And as I talked about with the conundrum that we have moving forward, so Kip Turner's got a lot on his plate to make our goalies better,
and the faceoff guys.
And the faceoff man, which is interesting that he has that dual role of the two specialty areas, but he's done a fantastic job in the past with it. So that to me is, you know, we the will is here, the skill is not quite where it needs to be. And those are the two areas where it's all about the skill, the goalie and the face-off.
One of your first years is Docs Aitken, whom many consider to be the top high school player in the nation last season. What have you seen from him so far in this first month? Have you figured out how you're going to use him? Where you're going
to
use him?
That's a good question, where to use him. We're actually thinking about making him an attackman. But he has not done that until this afternoon. And when we practice, he's going to be on attack. And we're going to see what that looks like. Big, strong athlete, in great shape. He is stepped on the campus, ready to be a Division I impact player. The right mindset. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you know you're around an athlete, you can feel like a presence, like, yeah, this guy gets it. He's been impressive on the field. He has a lot. He's got some things to learn with the shooting that we've got to work on and improve. And that's why we like to do those skill sessions for the first 4 weeks. I don't want to assume, you know, that Jeff White, this big top recruit we got, let's not assume he knows how to roll to his left hand or split to his right and get his shot off. Let's go through those basics. And we've been able to see a couple things that Docs needs to work on. But I, you know, the office, we're kind of struggling. You know, could he be an attackman? He's probably naturally a middie. Mm-hmm. But the way he finishes, this big, strong presence around the goal, we were spoiled with Dylan Malloy. So we've moved to the big, strong, power, dodging attackman model, as opposed to trying to find that guy, that little water bug, quick little guy, because it seems like there's a few who can do it. Certainly North Carolina had a couple of those last couple of years. But it's hard to find them, whereas sometimes just the body power through. And so Docs could be that type of dodger. He does a great job creating better angles because he'll engage contact. He looks for contact to drive the defenseman back and then roll and have more cage to shoot at. So I think he could be comfortable in tight, but we got a lot to experiment with him.
Ryan Conrad came in about this time last year with similar accolades and had a solid freshman season. He had a really good summer. In July, he had the winning goal with 8 seconds left for the United States against Canada in the gold medal game of the Under-19 World Championships. You expect him to make a jump in his second year, which you commonly see from middies in particular.
Exactly. What I love so far about Ryan is on a team that's working hard, I can feel his presence working even a little harder. And that's so critical for a program, that your best players are your hardest workers. Ryan Conrad is certainly starting proving to us that he's one of our better players, but he definitely is one of the hardest workers. So he has the will to get better, and he is proving it with what we're seeing in practice in our skill sessions. So I do foresee, if Ryan maintains the mindset he has, and I don't see why he wouldn't, that you will see him step up into a bigger role and then more limelight on the national stage. I think he's ready for the pressure that the media is putting on him. And the best way to be prepared for that pressure is just to have that mindset to work, and he's got it. He wants to be great.
A coaching change can often mean a fresh start for players who, for one reason or another, did not have big roles under the previous staff. Are there any guys who maybe didn't figure prominently in the Virginia system last season who've kind of starting to emerge for you? Is it too early for that?
It's a little too early for that, but to be honest with you, the conundrum, do you watch last year's films?
A lot of film.
And we haven't. And there's definitely some value there, but we've been focused more on watching this fall's film. Like every practice we watch, every most skill sessions we rewatch as a staff. And so it's like, yeah, we could look at the historical perspective from the sports perspective, but let's just kind of move this thing forward. So there's been a couple times I've asked, did that guy play last year? Because he's pretty good, you know, but for the most part, we've tried not to know. So I honestly can't really answer that question. And the better perspective is also probably that the fact that we've only had two practices.
Right. Two full team.
But it's a good point. When you bring in a new coaching staff, you know, the guys who played a lot last year should be a little more, you know, unsettled than the guys who didn't play, because now they've got...
Right. Well, we're seeing that with football now, too.
Are you?
You know, there are guys who, you know, did not figure in last season who are playing bigger roles this year, and probably vice versa a little bit. So I don't think it's uncommon. Let me ask you a final question. I know you got to get ready for practice. You've been in Charlottesville now for at least a couple months.
Yeah.
How do you like the area, and you finding your way around all right?
Oh, I'm glad I finally cooled off.
Yeah.
Everyone in my office is freezing. I'm like, this is great. Our first practice Sunday, it was sort of, you know, mid-60s. you know, the whole, everyone else had like jackets and I was just in a t-shirt, you know. I'm from Syracuse, New York, so I appreciate the cool. The people down here are phenomenal. I'm still working on my recruiting pitch, you know, and I've had some time to spend with other coaches. We had this great experience with Mike Lennox, the Darting School Chief Strategy Officer.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, but I think we're probably running low on time. Yeah. I know you were part of that workshop.
That was a phenomenal day learning about the recruiting. But one thing that's coming out of my mouth in the last couple of weeks to recruits and their parents is I feel like Charlottesville is a place where every age wants to live here. The college students, there may not be a better place to go to college in the country. People my age, you know, we seem to really love living here. And the retirees are moving here. So this is such a great community. The feeding off the vibe and the energy of the college students is wonderful. Being around just intelligent, motivated, energetic people who can do whatever they want. And then the beauty of the place. So we've really been warmly welcomed here. And it's great to have Charlotte and Tara down. And so life is good. Now, I know life is really good because we're undefeated still. But we have a lot of work to do there. But couldn't be happier.
Life is good because we survived that summer, and that was a brutal one. So it shouldn't ever be any worse than that. But anyway, we'll end on that note. Thanks again for stopping by, and best of luck.
All right, thank you, Jeff.
Several UVA teams are on the road this weekend, but field hockey, men's soccer, and women's soccer are playing in Charlottesville. For schedules and information on all our teams, check virginiasports.com. As always, thanks for tuning in to the Wahoo Central Podcast, and we'll be back next week with another one.